It's time for the VolQuest podcast, where we dissect the biggest news items of the week.
Hey, good Tuesday morning, everybody. Welcome to the VolQuest podcast. I'm Eric Kane, alongside Rob Lewis, Sprint Hubs, and Austin Price. Exterior Home Solutions, presenting sponsor of the show. Can pick up the phone today and get a free estimate if you dial 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. They've been East Tennessee's number one choice for roofing, siding, windows, and garages since 1999. So give Exterior Home Solutions a look today. Got a lot to get discussed here on the VolQuest podcast. A transfer portal commitments, junior day this past weekend, and basketball coming up short in the Mid-State. How will it respond against Mississippi State's and Auburn later this week? All that and more here coming up on the VolQuest podcast. Let's start with Star Thomas. It is a position group that we talked about it last week. A lot of faith, love Peyton Lewis and what Deshaun Bishop brings, like DeJuan Morris and Justin Baker, but kind of needed a veteran in that group to get in the rotation. Brent, it looks like Star Thomas is a guy that can be just that. He's been productive at every different stop along the way. He started in junior college, 2 years at New Mexico State, a year at Duke, and now coming over to Tennessee, and he'll be a part of that rotation next fall.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I think it says a lot about what the running back market is, because I think this is a pretty productive guy to be in the transfer portal where he's at. Obviously, Tennessee gets him, but in terms of the other opportunities he had out there, you know, Cal seemed to have some interest in him. Austin, Central Florida had interest in him, but I think it tells you a lot about sort of the running back market, if you will, in some ways. But this is a guy who 800 yards rushing or around that at Duke, productive everywhere he's been. I think he can step in and be a nice piece to a running back room that's got some interesting pieces. I mean, I think some real talent and some unproven work in there. But what will be a pretty deep group now, or a pretty solid group now, for Darrell Sims to work with?
Yeah, I mean, could they have survived next year with four running backs? Yeah, if everybody stayed healthy. I mean, they didn't have to have anybody. But, like, let's look at this past year. Had Peyton Lewis got hurt against Ohio State, I mean, they were going to go to a walk-on, you know, after him. So, I mean, like, you just never know when you get to that point in the season where, you know, somebody's left to go to the portal, somebody's hurt, another guy's hurt, all of a sudden you're down to one. Like, you need that extra body. And Star Thomas is a very quality player who I think, you know, wanted a shot to play in this league, probably took a little bit less money to play here than he could have elsewhere. And, we'll get a crack here. I mean, Deshaun Bishop and Peyton Lewis, to me, would still be the two that are considered to be the front runners for the most carries. But you just don't know what you have until you get them here. Look at a year ago, Brent. I mean, everybody assumed that Miles Kitzelman was just the extra body. And then he got here in spring, and everybody said, this guy's actually a little better than we thought. And then next thing you know, he's the leading guy in the tight end room. So, we'll see what happens when they get to spring practice. What does he bring to the table?
Yeah, I think it's interesting, too, guys, when you look at this. I mean, and it's not fair, but how much did Deshaun Bishop's injury stuff over the course of the last couple of years give you a little bit of pause as to what your depth is like? And I don't think that's fair to Deshaun, Rob, when you look at it. I mean, he's the guy who's been productive. It's not his fault he hurt his ankle. And I mean, I don't think he's a fragile human being when you look at the amount of carries he's had. But the fact that he's not made it through two seasons the last 2 years, he's not been available the entire year, did that give you a little more of a, maybe we need to make sure we've got enough depth there and some experience so that we're not, you know, in a situation where our backup is only a freshman, that's our only option?
I mean, that's totally how I looked at it. Now, AP's way more in the weeds with it than I am as far as, you know, the nuts and bolts. But just for me personally, it totally felt like depth. And, you know, just what you said, Hubbard, you don't want to go in, you know, maybe, you know, you're a snap away from relying on a true freshman. And I don't think it's a knock on Deshaun. I just think it's the nature of that position in the SEC. I mean, it's not uncommon for your top guy to, you know, either miss a game or two or be questionable for 2 or 3 weeks in a row while he deals with an ankle sprain. So, no, I mean, I think it was just a reflection of, you know, the running back room being kind of unique. You got four scholarship guys, but you don't have anybody that, you know, is an upperclassman, you know, a senior, or and you're a heartbeat away from two freshmen being, you know, all up in your game plan.
Well, I mean, you look at both running back and receiver, there's a lot of parallels there between the two. I mean, at running back, I mean, Lewis is a freshman, a true freshman who, you know, played some but didn't play a great deal. Deshaun Bishop is a redshirt freshman, same thing. And the other two are going to be true freshmen. Look at wide receiver. I mean, you've got you have seven currently. You have four of which have never played a college snap because Amari Jefferson didn't play this past year. Two of which played little to none. And then Chris Brazel, who, you know, did pretty well at Tulane, but was not near the impact guy that we all thought he would be at receiver. So, I mean, same thing there. I mean, like, this is an offense that has a lot of unknown going into the offseason. So to be able to bring in a guy like Star Thomas, who, you know, at the ACC level put up 1,000 combined yards last year, I think that's a really solid get considering where you're at sitting here on January 21st, you know, as second semester starts on campus.
I think it's much more than just adding a body because of what you just mentioned. I mean, the ACC level had over 1,000 combined yards. He's proven that he can catch the football out of the backfield. I know that's not necessarily what Tennessee's offense is about, but he can do that. He was an all-conference player 1 year at New Mexico State. Just looking at the stat sheet and doing research on him, I mean, he's looks like he's not missed significant time whatsoever, so he's a durable guy. And, more than anything, too, it's a guy that obviously is going to come in and play, but I don't know his leadership style. I don't know if he's a vocal leader, if he's a lead by example. I don't know if he's a leader at all. I have no clue. But, you know, having that type of guy to step into the room, Brent, and seeing his track record, and then you have two young guys who, you know, sky's the limit for a guy like, you know, Peyton Lewis, but two young guys who have already had their fair share of injuries, how to go about just the day-to-day grind and all that. I think that it's going to be beneficial in more ways than just on the field. I think he's a guy that is going to be a nice role model in that room, and I think it's going to make that whole group better.
Yeah, we'll see how he blends in. We'll see how he adjusts to it. I mean, he obviously transitioned into Duke well from New Mexico State, so this is not new to him. AP, I'll go back to your point, and I'll just become the general's quarters posters here and the YouTube commenters here.
46%. That was 46%.
And go, where's – you're talking about getting a proven running back, sure, because of the parallels to the wide receiver. Where's the proven wide receiver in the portal?
Well, I think you let it play out. And again, if we're sitting here come the weekend and there's no traction with anybody, I think that that's a little bit problematic. You know, I mean, they can always go to the spring portal, but I think that's just something you want to try to avoid if you can. I think Tennessee needs some help at receiver. We'll see if anything transpires. You know, everybody asked about Amari Evans. I told you I didn't believe Tennessee was doing anything with there or doing much there outside of just some initial conversations. I don't believe he is in play here. We'll see if anybody at Notre Dame or Ohio State enters the portal that would catch Tennessee's eye. Because they'd be the last two teams that will have this 5-day portal window. Now that they've played last night, and they'll begin today. And then, I mean, how many schools can get players in at that point as well? Like, let's say somebody goes in that you have interest in. I mean, how many schools are you realistically battling it out for? I'm with Hubs that drop an ad isn't what it used to be, but you know, if you started like let's say January 6th, January 7th, January 8th, any of those time in that time range. Can you get a kid in this late? I mean, maybe you can. I don't know. We'll see. But, I think you just kind of let it play out. Like I said, if you get to the weekend and Tennessee's not really in play with anybody, that is, to me, a bit problematic.
Yeah, I don't think the drop ad deadline's even a thing anymore. It's like the old 85 number. Everybody always worried about the 85 number. I don't think you worry about drop ad deadline. Tennessee welcomed in two high school freshmen last year, 4 days before, 2 days before spring practice started. That was in the middle of March. They got them into school. So
they had to do online stuff between January 1st and.
Yeah, I still think you can get guys in school. So I don't think for other schools that's a huge issue anymore. I think you can. There's a billion different ways to make that work. But the point is, do they find somebody who's a more proven person, more proven body? To go into that receiver room. That'll be interesting to watch over the course of the next few days and the next couple of weeks for sure. And again, we may have more coaching changes. You never know what's going to happen.
Well, I mean, that's probably the best point is who is going to get a job you didn't see coming? Who's going to leave a job? I mean, like you go to the basketball route, who saw, you know, some of the changes, who saw Tony Bennett leaving 5 minutes before the season started? Who leaves in March that just says, I can't do this? And then you open up a 30-day window for a team that you're like, ooh, that's a guy that we might have interest in. Like, I mean, that's probably the best point is like, because we've seen that the last few years is you've seen a couple of jobs. Obviously, Nick stands out the most a year ago, but we've seen a couple of jobs come open in that January, February timeline for whatever reason, whether it's a head coach going to be a coordinator in the NFL, a head coach getting an NFL job, whatever, or just retiring altogether. So, you know, that's probably the best point Hubs just made.
Yeah, I didn't feel like a lot of college head coaches are in play to be NFL head coaches, but
you could be an NFL coordinator, though.
That's what I was going to say. You could be an NFL coordinator, although not many people are going to walk away from probably from $6 or $7 million and take a $5 million pay cut to be a coordinator. But we live in a world where Chip Kelly walked away from UCLA to just because he didn't want to deal with it and he wanted to be a coordinator. So certainly anything is possible. That's why. Nothing is done until it's done at this point in time when you talk about the transfer portal.
Yeah, just a couple of years ago, the Boston College head coach left to go and coach for the Packers. So, I mean, anything's possible for sure. And we'll see what happens over the course of this week in regards to the transfer portal. Junior Day, first one of 2025, took place this past weekend on campus. Number of recruits were on hand. I think, by my account, I think 5 of the 8 commits for the 26 class were on campus, and that was great. But outside of those commits, by my account, it looked like they had, what, four or five top 100 prospects. Looked like a pretty good haul they got here on campus on Saturday, Austin.
Yeah, we'll start with Rodney Dunham. That's the guy that, you know, probably passes the eye test, is the biggest attention getter for me. You know, Tennessee's in a really good spot there. A dual sport kid, plays baseball, plays football. There at Myers Park, wouldn't call Tennessee his leader, said that they're in the top three, but Tennessee's the only place he knows he's going to officially visit. So, like, I get him not wanting to say Tennessee's the leader, and it's probably smart, but I think Tennessee is the leader. Otherwise, you would have more than just Tennessee slated for an official visit. And he doesn't know exactly what day he's going to officially visit Tennessee. He just knows they're for sure getting an official visit. You know, and that's a big thing for Tennessee. They want to continue to work the Tar Heel State. Obviously, Bill Belichick's going to try to close the borders down over there. I don't think that's realistic, but I do think North Carolina will have more success with in-state kids than they've been having with Belichick. Dunham, a very intelligent kid, smart kid, talks to Chop, talks to Rodney Garner a ton, just has a really nice job with the staff. Outside of that, Braden Rouse, I think Tennessee leads for him. I think Tennessee did a really nice job with Jordan Smith. You know, as an impressive a kid as I saw was one of the committee guys, that being Tyron Evans, the receiver from Huff. I mean, he's just a load. And so, you know, they'll have another junior day this coming weekend. It will not be that last weekend was kind of invite only. And, you know, I think getting Brandon Anderson, who's another committee guy, back to campus was big because he's taking visits. Florida obviously is, you know, trying to throw some money around with, you know, with Billy Napier on more stable ground, so to speak, at least for now. You know, getting Brandon Anderson back up here, the offensive lineman, I think that was a big deal for Tennessee this past week.
AP, tell us about, you spoke with Rodney Dunham, obviously, but let's go back to the edge and Auburn commit and Harris, who Tennessee likes an awful lot.
Yeah, and again, I think getting him up here was big. The more you can get him here, the better. The better chance you have to flip him. He's an Alabama kid. He's committed to Auburn. I'm not saying that it's not doable because it's doable. But
and he's been committed to Auburn for a while, too.
Yeah. Here's the thing. What's Auburn look like next fall? You stay in that one, Hubbard, for the long term because let's say Auburn doesn't win a bunch of football games next fall. Are they going to just continue to go down that road with Hugh Freeze, or does all of a sudden he become really expendable for Auburn, even though they've had some change? You know, I mean, where are they at? What do they look like next fall? You know, are they much better? Are they about the same? If they're about the same, I think he's probably in trouble. That's why you continue to recruit a guy like Hezekiah Harris, because if things fall apart on the plains, you're the school that's been there, old steady the whole time, waiting in the wings.
Well, and Rob, in this day and age, you just don't fall off the map with anybody. You know, whether it's a coaching change, whether it's transfer portal, whatever, you swing, right? Like, I mean, you just don't cut your list down because you never know how things are going to play out over the next 18 months.
Well, and let's be honest. I mean, most upper level kids have, you know, a professional in their corner saying, hey, you know, just like what you're saying, keep your options open, you know, just because of the financials. And that's not, I'm not saying that's wrong for kids to do it. I mean, it's smart. I mean, you don't want to, you know, eliminate every suitor that's out there, and let's face it. I mean, when it comes to the NIL game, it's probably pretty smart to have Tennessee, you know, one of the teams that's in your orbit.
Yeah.
Jonas Walton, highly rated four-star prospect as well, was on campus at the running back position. I know Matt caught up with him, but what was kind of your gauge on him?
Yeah, I think Tennessee's in a fairly good spot there. I mean, I think he's in the top three of wants at the tailback spot. You know, he's a very mature-looking kid, a really well-put-together kid. And, depending on what Tennessee does at tailback, I could see him ending up in this class. Again, the more you can get him up here, the better for Tennessee.
How big is it when Faison Brandon just continues to come back? I mean, obviously, I know that doesn't hurt anything, but he comes back as much as he can, is what I'm trying
correct.
To say.
Correct, and he's constantly talking to guys, Eric. I mean, he was supposed to be here. I know he was in our war room list. He didn't come because of the fear of, the road conditions worsening. Because of the path they take. Remember, they take a different path coming from their spot than, coming from Charlotte. And so he ended up not coming. But Tennessee was there to see him on Friday night. He constantly is talking to these receivers, Tyreek King, Tyron Evans, and then, of course, Tristan Keyes, who he is uber close with. And to me, it's a big reason why Keyes and Tennessee are in such a good spot is Faison Brandon. So, to your point, it's really big that, he's continued to come over as much as he can and continue to be very present with recruits, even when he's not around.
Hey, AP, how much does his voice resonate more the more he goes out and shows out like he has at different events already this year? And I'm not saying people question whether he was a good player or not, because I don't think that's ever been the question. But he's obviously a guy who is into peer recruiting. He works the phones and everything. How much more does a call from him resonate, or does it resonate anymore at all when players – see what he's done? He's the MVP here. He gets this award there, that type of thing at these events he's been attending.
I think that it resonates. How much weight? I think the weight is small. In the old days, I think the weight would have been more. But in this day and age, Hubbard, you know how this is. I mean, kids, the money piece matters the most. Relationships matter second. They do matter, though. I mean, it's not like it doesn't matter. I just don't think that any particular player carries that much weight that somebody's willing to take significantly less money to go play with, player X. I think that it matters. I think when it comes down to it, it's like, okay, the money's pretty close. Well, I want to play with Faison. Okay, the money's pretty close. I want to play for this coach. I don't think anybody is going, I'll take five times less to go play with Faison Brandon. I just don't think people think that way. But I do think he matters. It does carry weight. I just don't think it carries as much weight as 10 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, that's kind of where I would lean, too. Because the other thing, too, Rob, is you can go someplace else for more, and if you don't like it in 9 months, just pack up and leave.
Or Amari Jefferson, perfect example. I mean, there's just no penalty.
Right.
Very, very – I wouldn't say no penalty. The penalty is just – not enormous. I mean, I think the quarterback position is, probably the biggest one, where you can roll the dice. If in the past, if guys just wouldn't go to a crowded room or a crowded depth chart. Now you can go, take your shot. If it doesn't work out, transfer out.
I think it's easier too for high school kids to say, I'm going to take my shot. They've not been in the room. They've not seen a kid up close unless they've somehow played against them or whatever. And so how many guys that are entering a school as a five-star top player think, I'm going to go in and take over. And then they get in there and they go, wait a minute, I'm good, but that might be better.
I would say 90% of them.
Yeah, because they've been the best player on the team they've been on since they were seven.
And they think this is a pit stop to the NFL. Everybody thinks they're going to the NFL. That's just kind of the mindset you have.
Yeah, so I'm with you guys. I mean, I think that's a normal thought process. I just think it's changing the dynamic of how you recruit, the effectiveness of recruiting, what's important to recruiting is interesting, unless things get back to, the money side of it's, getting equal, is becoming more equal. I don't know. I think how recruiting, the life recruiting takes in the course of the next couple of years is going to be pretty interesting to watch.
Last thing before we move on to some basketball conversations, Austin, the coaching staff's been all over the place last little bit, you know, going out, meeting with prospects, speaking with them. I know you guys have, you and Matt both have, you know, done a good job of tracking all that, but who were some big ones that got some visits from the Tennessee coaching staff over the last couple of weeks or the last couple of days?
Well, I think for Tennessee, it's just about getting out there and being present right now in the month of January. You know, I think going to see Savion Hyder's big. I think Justice Haynes' arrival at Michigan has put Tennessee back kind of on a level playing field. I think Michigan had ascended to be the kind of the top team for him. But all of a sudden, that room is looking a lot more daunting than, let's say, Tennessee's, who, you know, as we just discussed, has a guy who's going to be a one and done. And then, you know, I don't think Savion Hyder's looking going, you know, oh, Deshaun Bishop or oh, this person. Like, being able to get around him, I think, has been big for Tennessee. You know, same thing with, you know, any of the, you know, whether it be Tristan Keys for Kelsey Pope or any of these offensive linemen, Caden Harris out in West Tennessee. I think it's been important to get the coaches out and about, you know, because it's one, you can go see them. You can spend a little more time with them. The rules have kind of, loosened is the right word compared to, you know, 5-10 years ago with what all you can do in the month of January. And so, you know, being able to be out, have Josh Heupel out because, you know, head coaches can't go out on the road any other time of year. It's important to be seen and to be heard. And I think, you know, you've seen like Coach Chop. I mean, he's out on the road, even though he's technically not a quote on the field coach. He's not one of the main nine. I think what you're seeing is Coach Heupel sees the importance of getting Coach Chop out on the road. And he's going to see everybody. What you've seen is Alec Ablin go out and go see more offensive line, you know, players in the 2026 class than normal. He's just not seeing tight ends. And so he's helping Glenn Ellerbe. So they're tandem recruiting more.
A lot going on right now in terms of recruiting, and you can find daily notes, weekly notes, all that and more on the General's Quarters and at VolQuest.com. Hey, when we come back, we'll take a look at Tennessee basketball, a rough one on Saturday, but a big week coming up. How does Tennessee respond? All that and more coming up next here on the VolQuest podcast. But first, let's get a word from our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions.
Hey, Sterling, man, come on. We got a roof to replace.
Let's go, baby. Let's go.
Hey, Sterling, you ready to go to the top?
Man, I can't believe you guys been doing this for 25 years. Oh, baby.
Now, this is what I call a rooftop party.
We have 25 years experience in roofing and exterior renovations, and we're backed by the best.
Are you ready to get your rooftop party started? Give us a call, 865-524-5888.
As always, big thank you to our friends, Exterior Home Solutions, 865-524-5888, online at exteriorhomesolutions.com, local and trusted since 1999, East Tennessee's number one choice for roofing, siding, garage, windows, all that and more. That is our presenting sponsor, Exterior Home Solutions. Hey, are you ready to optimize your nutrition this year? Factor has a chef-made gourmet meals making eating well super easy. They're dietitian approved, ready to heat and eat in 2 minutes so you can fuel up and feel great no matter what life has thrown your way. Factor arrives fresh and fully prepared, perfect for any active, busy lifestyle. You can lose up to 8 pounds in 8 weeks with Factor Keto meals. Based on randomized controlled clinical trial with Factor Keto, results will vary depending on diet and exercise. 40 options with 40 options across 8 dietary preferences on the menu each week. It's easy to pick meals tailored to your goals. Choose from preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, or Keto. Factor can help you feel your best all day long with wholesome smoothies, breakfasts, grab-and-go snacks, and even more add-ons. Reach your goals this year with ingredients you can trust and the convenience that you simply can't beat. Eat smart with Factor. Get started at factormeals.com/VQ50off. Use the promo code VQ50off. That is VQ50OFF. VQ50off. So that when I said O, it's a zero. So VQ50OFF. VQ50off for 50% off your first box plus free shipping. That ain't bad, right? That's promo code VQ50off at factormeals.com/VQ50off to get 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. All right, tough one. Tough one all around. Lady Vols, you know, men Vols, everybody around Tennessee basketball in the Mid-State this weekend. A combined 2-point loss for two teams to Vanderbilt. Obviously the men. Number of different angles here, Rob. Let's start with Chaz Lanier. He responded in a big way, made 4 3-pointers, led the team in scoring, had a lot of family in town for his homecoming. came up short at the rim there, trying to get that layup to tie the game. And then, of course, at the charity stripe, he made the front end of a 1-1 and missed that second one, and Tennessee loses there. Tough rebound for Chaz Lanier, and I'm excited to kind of see how he responds here in the shortcoming. But obviously that one that probably weighed on him a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be surprised if he doesn't bounce back, you know, strong. I mean, I'm not saying he'll go for 40 against Mississippi State, but I don't think he's the kind of guy that you know, missing that free throw is going to get in his head and beat him down. Now, I do think it's probably eating him up inside. But I'll be surprised if that lingers and if he doesn't bounce back in the right way. But man, I mean, for me, that's got to be your biggest takeaway or your most enduring memory from that game. But good Lord, I mean, Tennessee should not have been in that position. I mean, and I give Vandy all the credit in the world. They played well. They totally deserved to win that game. I mean, you don't see Tennessee get outplayed, out-executed by a less talented team very often, but they did on Saturday.
Rob, what when you look at this Tennessee team, and I don't want to be in the there's no panic button or anything like that. I'm not suggesting that. I mean, Tennessee shot the basketball well from a percentage standpoint on Saturday. It did feel like it was hard at times to get looks. But they've given up 70 points, I think, in three of the last four outings. What's your bigger concern about this basketball team as they head into, obviously, this week and this gauntlet that is the SEC?
Oh, I mean, it's what you just said. I mean, it's the defense and the rebounding to me. Because, I mean, you know, points are going to be hard to score some nights. I mean, they just are. I mean, Tennessee's not been as good offensively in SEC play as I would have thought. And I don't want to pile on him, but I think a lot of that is Chaz Lanier's been struggling. And quite frankly, I mean, that's where they look for a lot of their offense. And, you know, he had three games there where, you know, he just didn't have it. But Hubbard, I was shocked on Saturday. Not that they lost. I mean, stuff happens on the road, but they just didn't get stops in the second half when they needed them. I mean, that was a game. I mean, Tennessee scored 41 points in the second half. I mean, that was plenty of offense for them on most nights. And they just couldn't string together any stops. I mean, they finally did in the last 3 minutes. And frankly, I mean, I think that was more Vanderbilt kind of looking around going, you know, holy crap, we're about to, you know, knock off Tennessee. And right. just kind of losing their minds for three or four possessions than Tennessee doing anything great. But I just, you know, Vandy shot over 50% for most of that second half and out-rebounded Tennessee. And those are two things, you know, it wasn't shots weren't falling. I mean, like you said, I mean, Tennessee shot it well. They made 10 three-pointers. The fact that they lost that game because Vandy out-rebounded them, they got 18 second-chance points, which is huge for them. And Vanderbilt, you know, I don't want to call them soft, but, I mean, they don't really have particularly, you know, tough reputation around this league as far as a, you know, rebounding defensive team. And they beat Tennessee in those areas. And that was shocking to me.
Yeah, Vanderbilt got 21 points off turnovers. Of course, Tennessee had a turnover issue as well. Lanier bounced back in terms of the points, but he did have five turnovers. That didn't help him. It's been a couple of days since this game, and I know you've written about it and you guys have spoken on it already. But, again, I'd like you to chime in on hindsight 2020, and I know Barnes does this. This is not new, but Ziegler sitting for the last 7 minutes and change or whatever the first half, and Tennessee was outscored 20-9 during that run. Obviously, that was a huge point in the football in the basketball game, gave Vanderbilt tons of momentum going into the break.
I mean, I don't love it, and I would have. I mean, personally, you know, I would have. If it's Zakai, if it's my senior point guard, I would have played him. I mean, maybe not all this, you know, the whole 7 minutes, but I would have tried to, you know, after that last media timeout, I would have tried to get him in there at 4 minutes. But hey, I mean, like you said, Eric, I mean, Rick does that. I mean, it's, you know, there's times in the past where he has played Zakai with two fouls. He's totally played Santi with two fouls a few times, but that's typically him as his MO. I mean, he's never going to play a big guy with two fouls in the first half. But, you know, hindsight is what it is. And I feel like he felt like he'd gotten away with it. I mean, if Jemiah doesn't foul, you know, the 3-point shooter and they end the half with a 4-point play, Tennessee goes in the locker room down two. But, you know, again, I mean, I totally get why fans are upset about it, but to me, Tennessee had gotten away with that if they just, you know, play their brand of defense and rebound the basketball in the second half.
Rob, back to defensively, we'll get to rebounding specifics on the rebounding in a minute. But defensively, what's the issue? What are teams doing? What do you think is causing some of the ball screen defensive issues? Tennessee's back to giving up I think too many straight line drives, to teams. I mean, what do you put the finger on that?
Hubbard, that's to me, I mean, that's outside looking in. I'm not sitting in the film room with him, and I haven't had Coach Barnes hasn't specifically said, hey, this is our biggest problem. To me, I mean, I'm going with the keep it simple, stupid. And to me, it looks like they are giving up a lot of straight line drives. I mean, maybe not all the way to the bucket. I'm not saying that, but enough to, move the defense around. And that's just never a weakness, or at least a glaring weakness for Tennessee. And again, I'm small sample size, and maybe it's not as big of a problem. But to me, I've seen the same thing you did. And again, people not blow bys for layups and right. that kind of thing, but they're getting what people call paint touches, and they're getting it a lot of times with the dribble, as opposed to having to work it in there. And Tennessee's still a good defensive team. We're not saying that, but they're not. Tennessee's not going to be one of the top three or four teams in this conference playing the way they had the first 2 weeks.
And how do they fix? How do they fix the rebounding issue, particularly without Para? Obviously his focal point is blocking shots, and so when you get four or five blocks, I mean those are possession changing type plays. But when you miss on that, you're giving up a lot of ground or a lot of space in the paint for an offensive rebound. What's Tennessee's answer to handling the boards and still having the rim protector that they want and need without Para?
I don't know if it was – again, I would really have to look at it and see if it was – if Vandy just kind of balled out and got him. Because and that hasn't been a – Florida beat Tennessee up, but that really hasn't been a weakness. I mean, Tennessee absolutely bludgeoned Arkansas in that department. I mean, they beat Texas on the glass. I mean, it's – I don't think it's an Achilles heel, but maybe I'm wrong. I mean, maybe I am. Maybe I'm giving him too much credit. But Akpar, I thought he played really nice. He hit every shot he took. I mean, five of them were dunks. I mean, from Zakai. But a guy that's 7 foot and that athletic gets four rebounds in 27 minutes. I mean, that's a little head scratching to me. And I don't think it's effort at all, because the guy leaves it out there completely. But to me, I mean, the fact that he's that, that athletic, and he just maybe doesn't have a knack for it. Because you look at Igor, not nearly the athleticism, not nearly the traits, and he just goes and finds it. So it's kind of like rushing yardage in the SEC. I mean, rebounding has been a barometer for this team early on. I mean, I think it is for a lot of teams, but I think it's maybe a little exaggerated for these guys.
Well, and how does it change, Rob, when they're playing the lineup that they played with most of the second half, with one big who's going after every block shot, and then you've got Gainey, Lanier, Zakai, who is going to struggle to box out people at his height, right?
Oh yeah.
And then you got Igor in there. I mean, you're not exactly in the tall timbers in terms of boxing people out.
No, but I mean, it wasn't like – I mean, they were matching up with Vandy. It wasn't like they were
– I know. That's my point moving forward.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But it wasn't – it's not like they – I guess for people that don't know what you're saying, it wasn't like Tennessee got overwhelmed by size because they went with four guards. I mean, they were just matching up. So, yeah, I mean, in that situation, Jamai only played 18 minutes. I think, because of matchup, I think, because, wouldn't Gainey's offense probably primarily. I think of Jamai's – in that four guard lineup, that changes the equation somewhat. And I don't know exactly how many minutes he played, but I know that, it's not often that Jordan plays that many more minutes than Jamai did. And he did
33 to 23. Yeah.
Yeah. He did on Saturday. So, I mean, I think that skews your rebounding a little bit, but I mean, if you're going to go small, I mean, I think you want Jamai out there for that reason, Hubbard. I mean, I know that, he's got some liabilities maybe offensively, but, Gainey brings a lot to the table. But when you're talking about what he brings rebounding versus Jamai, I mean, that's going to be an issue, especially if you're going to play Igor, at the five.
And, Rob, with that lineup, what you're talking about, if you play that way, I mean, how does this team – and listen, Igor took two to the rack late in the game with two dunks, and maybe that was a kind of an aha moment for him to start to figure part of that out. But how do they get involved with an inside game that's not a lob to a Para? I mean, where do they find inside points that are not lob dunks?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good one. I mean, how much of it is there. I mean, I think it's got to be Igor. I mean, he's got, but because Felix just does not have that back to the basket. You know, he can give you a little power dribble left hook, but it's not, you're not going to call a lot of plays for him. But I mean, I think Igor can do some of that. I mean, he's crafty. You know, it might not look, you know, like a traditional 7 foot guy, but he can score it in the paint. And, but to me, the biggest thing is penetration. I mean, Zakai, I mean, if you're talking about paint points, about, you know, kind of like what Vandy did to Tennessee. I mean, and a lot of that's going to end up being lobs and so forth. I mean, that's is where your paint points are going to come from, is Zakai just, you know, collapsing things.
Well, but does I mean, is it just not going to be in Chaz's game to get to the free throw line off of some dribble penetration?
What we've seen so far, I don't have – Eric, it sounds like you might have the stats in front of you. How many more free throws has Jordan Ganey shot than Chaz Lear? It's a bunch.
On the season, I don't have it in front of me. But.
Well, I mean, it's a bunch. I mean, and think about how many more minutes Chaz has played than Jordan Ganey. And it's, I mean, that's just the because of how differently, you know, they play the game. I don't think Chaz is going to be a guy that traditionally does that, Hubbard. I mean, I think he can, but I think it's going to be a situation where, you know, it's been emphasized, out of a timeout.
And again, I'm not pushing any kind of panic button on anything with this basketball team, but that's a day where you shot the basketball well, but it still felt like it was really hard to score.
Yep. I mean, you know? I don't think it's panic. I mean, I think if you're talking – because this team was ranked number one in the country for, 4 or 5 weeks. And so we talk about them in that light. I mean, we're not talking about them as a fringe top 25 team. I mean, if they want to compete for the SEC title, I mean, the things we're talking about are fair criticisms. Here's a great one. That game Tennessee lost at Vanderbilt on Saturday, Auburn won a game just like that at Georgia.
Yeah.
That's going to be a big difference, you know, coming down the road. I mean, Georgia and Vandy, very similar. You know, both teams were motivated, both teams well coached, both teams were well prepared, and Auburn found a way to claw out a win. You know, what they scored, 70, you know, 70 to 68, and, you know, they survived, the Tennessee didn't. And that's, you know, the margins thin in this league.
Well, and Auburn was playing without their arguably best player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, big distinction.
I mean, it changes their mind a lot as well, Eric.
Yeah, I mean, how, talking about surviving, you know, without, have they won two now without him?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We'll see if he plays this weekend. 66 free throw attempts for Ganey, 47 for Lanier
season. And Chaz has played, you know, probably a couple hundred more minutes. And it's not, that's just Chaz's game. My point being, he's just not going to be that kind of guy.
Yeah. What do you make of Dubar's ever-evolving role? Again, it was to begin the season. You see him get a little bit more of the heroics in the second half at Texas. I know Rick said after the game they wanted to go defense, but as we pointed out, there wasn't much defense in the second half.
I was going to say, if you wanted an answer, it's going to be defense, because what we were talking about with the rebounding, Vandy played four guards, Tennessee matched up with him. But, yeah, I mean, when you're looking for a spark, I mean, like – Tennessee needed in the second half, I'd give the guy a shot. But that's just me, again, with coach, who he throws out there. I mean, maybe there's an anomaly sometime, but it's always going to be about who guards who. And, man, I mean, I don't have an answer for Dubar's minutes. I mean, I personally don't think he's like a magic, you know, solution to, you know, whatever fans think ails the team. And I get it. You've seen him go in there and make some shots here and there. You know, I would have liked to have seen him there in the second half or on Saturday, or at all on Saturday, just because what you said, it didn't seem like they had a whole lot of answers, especially when you're down 16.
Yeah, I mean, he's not in a regular rotation. It's just a random, which for a team that's got not enough bodies, you know, it's.
I mean, he's really played seven guys.
Yeah, I mean, it's really kind of a head scratcher that he's not just in the regular rotation for 3 minutes here, 2 minutes.
Even it's very much just, a feel for him, it feels like.
Yeah, I mean, even if it's just for a couple of minutes, you know, a smaller rotation, it's kind of bizarre on where that one is. And we'll see. I thought it was interesting, Rob Justin Ganey saying on Monday that, you know, the film session was, I guess he described it as healthy or good, you know, for them to talk things out. I mean, good from the standpoint of lots of lessons to be learned. I don't think I don't think fun from the standpoint of anybody enjoyed watching that one.
Yeah, I guess it probably depends on your tolerance.
maybe Justin, how did he characterize the film session after Florida is what I
Yeah, it's man, now that one, surprisingly, I think, you know, I wasn't in there, but I think in talking to people, surprisingly, I don't think that the paint was peeling off the walls as much in that one as you might think, as much as it was, you know, that one was just so bad. I think it was more like, you know, deep breath, here's everything that happened. Whereas I would say Saturday's, probably, you know, the end of both halves, I would say there was probably some extreme teaching moments.
You have so many more things to point towards in this game against Vanderbilt, to where you're like, you do that, you win the game. You do that, you win the game. You do that, you win the game.
Florida,
for not as reason, much losing by 30.
Yeah, for whatever reason at Florida, they were beat when they were off the bus.
Yeah.
At Vanderbilt, you could stop the tape 57 times and say, hey, if you don't do that, we win. If you don't do that, we win.
Hey, Rob, tell us about Mississippi State real quick, and then a little bit about Auburn. Obviously, a massive week coming up for Tennessee. Just
Mississippi State, I mean, for whatever, had Tennessee's number, you know, last year a couple times. I mean, physical, well-coached team with Chris Gans. You know, they're the same boat Tennessee is, 3-2, but, you know, have played well. When they lost, the one they regret, they lost at home to Kentucky. Not that that's an insult, but, you know, that's one that they really, you know, I'm sure early season, that would have been a springboard for them. So, you know, you got Josh Hubbard, who can absolutely, you know, score in bunches, can score in a hurry. They're a good rebounding team. You know, I think really a really nice matchup. I mean, you're going to like Tennessee's chances because they're at home, I think, quite a bit. But, and Mississippi State, very good. And I think Rick Barnes has a lot of respect for Gans. So, one of the, you know, kind of, Hubbard can get hot as anybody in the league. That's the guy that you're going to watch for. For sure, he can, you know, fill it up from outside. I think he's a little bit better at putting it on the floor this year, and more than just a 3-point shooter. But he's the key. But they're tough. I mean, they're tough. They're deep. They play, you know, 9 guys about 16, 17 minutes a game. So Tennessee gonna have to show up. I mean, it's no gimme at all as a bounce back spot at home.
Big week coming up for Tennessee basketball. Continual recruiting updates and notes on the journalist quarters throughout the week. Baseball season less than a month away. And Tennessee's still pursuing guys in the transfer portal. No better place to catch up with it all than at VolQuest.com and on the Journalist Quarters. We appreciate you guys for checking us out there. If you're listening to us and watching us on YouTube and you're not a member of VolQuest.com, this is just the tip of the iceberg here. We appreciate you for being here, but there's so much more that you can get in terms of Tennessee football news, notes, and more recruiting. That's over at VolQuest.com. For Brent Hubbs, Rob Lewis, Austin Price, I'm Eric Kane. Big thanks, as always, to our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions for being the presenting sponsor of the show. For a free estimate, pick up the phone today and dial 865-524-5888, and you can visit them online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. Appreciate you guys for being here. We'll talk to you on the Mailbag Podcast on Thursday. This is VolQuest.com.
You've been listening to the VolQuest podcast every week here on VolQuest.